Hello, everyone. Welcome to Shakya Presents Movie Night. I'm your host. My name is Rudy Obias. Joining me for this episode, he's a writer for MTV's NextMovie.com, Max Avery. Thank you so much for joining me here on Movie Night.
Thank you for having me, Rudy. We've managed to peel ourselves away from the Whitney Houston funeral so we could talk about anime.
Peel ourselves away is... I guess that would be the word I would use as well. There's not a lot of movies that we were going to talk about here on movie night. They didn't screen, Sony didn't screen Ghost Rider 2 for me. And I also didn't get a chance to see This Means War. So we're going to be discussing the new film from Studio Ghibli, The Secret World of Arrietty. For people who aren't familiar with Studio Ghibli, it's this Japanese anime powerhouse. I would say it's probably like the Disney of Japan, so much so that Disney actually bought Studio Ghibli and releases their films in America. At the head of Studio Ghibli is Hayao Miyazaki. Hayao Miyazaki is probably within the last 15 years, 20 years of Japanese animation, probably the most well-known. He's done movies like Princess Mononoke and Spirited Away. Spirited Away won the Oscar for Best Animated Feature back in 2001, 2002, I believe. And so this movie isn't directed by Hayao Miyazaki, but he wrote the screenplay and produced the movie The Secret World of Arrietty. This was directed by Hiroshima Yonbeashi. My Japanese is horrible. But Max, what are your thoughts on The Secret World of Arrietty?
Well, I think it is very much of a piece with all the other Studio Ghibli movies. It's just this unbelievably charming and, you know, sweet and whimsical. You know, and the animation is just second to none. It's a very beautiful kind of pastoral world based mostly around this one cottage in the countryside where a very sickly little boy is coming to live with his aunt, and he discovers this race of tiny little people who have been living in the garden for generations. And he develops a sweet relationship with the young girl who's, I guess, about 14 years old, whose name is Arrietty. And it's very much a coming of age story. It's very sweet. It's not like a love story, but there's like definitely a kind of connection between her and the boy. And there's all sorts of little playfulness between them, and as they learn to trust each other. But there, another thing that's kind of cool about the subtext of it is there's also this this whole essence of like fragility. Like they're these tiny little people, you know, and you could probably step on them and they'd be crushed, but in a lot of ways she's stronger than he is because he's got this heart condition, and it's very difficult for him to move around, but she kind of empowers him throughout the story as much as he helps her. And it's just a very adorable film that's based on a series of books by a British author by the name of Mary Norton. And the film has actually been made several times before, including a British one that starred John Goodman.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed this movie as well. I mean, I felt it was very touching and very the relationship between these two characters is very innocent, like just, and also this discovery of what's outside of your world. And I love the world building of this movie. One of my favorite things in this movie is when these small tiny people, very small people, are pouring tea. and when they're pouring it out of teapots, it's really just like a drop or two.
Yeah.
And you get this impression, well, that would be a perfect amount of tea for these people, would just be a drop of tea. Or and then when they're pouring water from buckets or getting water, it's always like a drop or two or three or four. And that was pretty consistent throughout the whole movie, I felt. And I felt that was a really well-made thing for these animators to do. Also, this movie kind of just reinvigorates me to the beauty of 2D animation, and also, I guess, the importance of animation in cinema, and that it's not namely just for children. It's also for adults as well. I mean, this movie isn't like really harsh or gritty or anything. It's very innocent and family oriented. But I feel everyone in your family, or even if you don't have a family, anyone could get something out of this movie because it's just so relatable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you were saying about the way they play with the sense of scale. Cause you're right. It's very, that's like the fun part of the movie is what they do with that. Like a drop of water is huge for them. And there's a great scene where the little boy discovers, their secret lair, and he brings a kitchen from a dollhouse to them. And as he's removing their kitchen and dropping the scale model kitchen into their lair, like it's just like it's like an earthquake. It's like the end of the world. It's just like everything shaking. There's dust everywhere. It's like Godzilla is there. But it's just this sweet little boy who's trying to do something nice for them.
Yeah. And this boy is pretty emo, I guess. He's very sensitive. He's kind of mopey. And I guess understandable because he has this condition where he could die. and it really captures that, you know, being isolated in a room for so long and wanting to explore everything else and just gravitating to this little person, Arietta, because it's just someone to listen to him. It's just someone to be a friend with. And I'm really glad that, you know, this movie just grounds this fantastical world in this friendship between these two characters. I guess my criticisms of this movie, I don't know. This is like almost, to me anyways, almost like a perfect anime in my opinion. I'm not sure like if I have any grievances. Well, maybe when they're talking to each other, like I think to myself, how could he actually hear her, because her voice would be also small. But that was something that was kind of forgivable for me anyways.
I think that it's a pretty flawless movie. I think my only criticisms would be putting it against the rest of the Studio Ghibli canon, which like there are a lot of other films like Nazca and the Valley of the Wind or Totoro, or my personal favorite, which is Porco Rosso, which I feel like those films feel a little bit bigger. They feel like they're exploring their subject matter in a slightly deeper way. Not to say that this one is superficial. I just think it's slight. It's just slighter than their other films, but I don't think it was intended to be anything else other than a really craftily told story.
Yeah, I think it would be saying like Monsters, Inc. isn't the best Pixar film, but it's still a pretty good movie, in my opinion anyways.
Sure, I love Monsters, Inc.
but a reason why I wanted to bring you on this episode to talk about The Secret World of Arrietty is because you actually just wrote this article for nextmovie.com, 9 Essential mm-hmm. Anime Movies. And these are movies that if you're wanting to get into this world of Japanese animation, you should probably check these out, because these are just as valuable to the conversation of Japanese animation as anything.
That's right. Yeah. And I think I think I'm as good a person as any to compile a list like a 9 Essential Anime Movies, because I'm not I'm not a, what you call a diehard anime fan. I appreciate anime, and I've seen a lot of this stuff before just out of my own interest, probably in science fiction or in comics and fantasy. But yeah, like I really don't have, I'm not swayed one way or the other. Like, I think like I tried to be as objective as I could in scouring similar lists and reading what other people on the internet had to say about certain films. And there are obvious choices like Akira and Spirited Away and Ghost in the Shell, which of course was a major influence for the Wachowskis on the Matrix trilogy. In some cases, they took it shot for shot from the film. But yeah, and then there's other ones that I honestly had never even heard of, called Ninja Scroll Memories, that are fantastic examples of what the medium is capable of. You know, there's a lot more to it than half-naked schoolgirls and tentacle rape.
Ninja Scroll is a fantastic film. I mean, this is just loads of fun in a movie where it's just this wandering, somewhat of a rogue samurai or ninja just goes from person to person, and it's just a lot of fighting and just weird type of characters with their weird abilities. I mean, there's a Zatoichi reference in this movie where Jubeijo is fighting this blind swordsman in a forest, and just really he has to be blindfolded too, and they're fighting without any sight, but they're just hearing what the other person's doing. And it's probably one of my favorite parts of that movie. You mentioned a movie, since you brought up Ghost in the Shell, how that was a very heavily influenced the Wachowskis' Matrix trilogy, Perfect Blue, Satoshi Kon's film. I feel that this movie is probably the most accessible anime, because I don't even consider it's anime, but it plays out like such a movie, like a typical movie. It just so happens that this is animated. And I remember when I watched Requiem for a Dream, Darren Aronofsky is a big fan of this movie, because in his second film, Requiem for a Dream, there's actually a couple shots that were directly taken from Perfect Blue, so much so that later on in his career with his last film, Black Swan, it's practically the same movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities, especially the way both the main characters, like I guess in Black Swan, she's a dancer, and in Perfect Blue, she's an actress. But it's like they're both kind of dealing with the stress being put on them, and trying to kind of reconcile with their own talent. And and there's a lot of that kind of reality flickering. There's some hallucinations. But you're right. Like there's a lot of people wondered why it even should have been animated. Like it's like it basically is like a live action movie done as animation. And I was watching it and I was like, Brian De Palma must have been like pissing himself that he didn't make this movie.
Well, I know the filmmaker Satoshi Kon, he his approach to filmmaking was he was just a big fan of animation, and that's what he really wanted to bring to his work. Out of all of his films, aren't indicative of anime to me, except his last film, Paprika,
which is a film that I love.
Yeah,
because my favorite filmmaker is Terry Gilliam.
Yeah,
and I think that Paprika is the closest I've ever seen to someone else doing a Terry Gilliam movie, because it's just so it's so hallucinatory and just full of imagination and craziness.
Yeah, but like the reason people get into animation is either because they love animation or they want to tell stories you can't necessarily tell live action, and doing it by drawing it, you can totally do it. The imagination is endless in animation, whereas in live action, it's restricted by reality and physics. Most of Satoshi Kon's films, practically all of them except Paprika, they're all bound by physics and bound by this real world. So he didn't necessarily have to make them animated. He just loved animation. It was only until his last film where he just became out of those bounds and wanting to do something more fantastical. I would also say check out Millennium Actress. That's his second film. And I would say that's his homage to Japanese cinema, like kind of how Inglourious Basterds or what Quentin Tarantino does with movies, just paying homage to other movies. Millennium Actress is that for Japanese cinema, because it encapsulates everything about Japanese cinema while paying homage to it. So I would definitely check out Millennium Actress.
Right. Yeah, no, that's definitely on my list of things that I want to see. I want to see Tokyo Godfathers as well. Since the article has come out, I've had several people recommend different films that I left off the list, like Blood, the Last Vampire, or another film called, I think it's called Tekken Concrete. And you recommended the two Evangelion movies, which I probably didn't even want to watch, because I think they're more continuations of this really epic TV series that I have no time to watch.
You should make time to watch, because it's one of the best animes you'll ever see. I guarantee that. And I think it's fairly short, maybe only 22, 23 episodes long, plus these two movies. I'm a huge fan of this work and the filmmaker Hideki Anno, who was clinically insane when he made these movies, when he made this TV series. So you can take that into consideration while you're watching it.
Sold.
I personally love anime, and there's a big difference between animation in America and animation in Japan, where in both countries we definitely see them as art, but it just seems like the Japanese aren't bound to it being just Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, that they really want to take it to this level for adults and for children. And it seems like American filmmakers or American animators aren't willing to go that far with breaking that mold of just delivering children films. I mean, even if you take the best of Pixar, it can't even get close to, I guess, even the darkest, or even what the stuff that Studio Ghibli is putting out in terms of relating it to adults as much as it is for kids.
Yeah, there's a lot of sanitization in the animation field in America. There's a lot of people are very, a lot of studios are very scared to put something out that's not going to appeal to 5-year-olds. I know David Fincher has had a great deal of difficulty getting both a heavy metal movie off the ground and a adaptation of The Goon, which is a fantastic comic book by Eric Powell, that would be like the greatest animated movie ever. But it would definitely be like either a hard PG-13 or a soft R in just in terms of content. Like studios look at it and they're like, well, wait, is this like WALL-E? And it's like, no, it's not like WALL-E. It's its own thing, and it's great, and it's, you know, I think years ago I remember Brad Bird said he wanted to punch the next person who referred to animation as a genre. It's not a genre; it's just a medium.
Yeah,
and you can do anything with it, and the Japanese understand that better than anybody.
And it just seems like I'm thinking of like American animators or directors that take animation past the Disney just for kids type of thing. I mean, even further than what Pixar is doing, thinking of like Ralph Bakshi or something that takes it to those levels. But his films aren't really as accessible, I would feel, for like general audiences. Where I guess you do have to find that balance to appeal to kids and also adults, but also wanting to take it a little bit further than even what Pixar is willing to do.
Yeah, I think the last really great adult animation that was made in America was probably Richard Linklater's Scanner Darkly, which is one of those movies that it's just barely an animation. Like they actually filmed the actors and then kind of rotoscoped over them. But by doing that, they created that disparity between what was real and what was, you know, sort of the character losing his mind. And it fit in very well with Philip K. Dick's book. I think it was a very smart move to adapt that novel that way, as opposed to in live action, because it emphasized that shifting quality of everything, and I thought that was a brilliant film, but did not break the bank at the box office.
Yeah, I think that's another thing too. I think once we get to a point where we just need one movie to make that kind of money at the box office. Because I'm thinking of like even Don Bluth or something, like Titan A.E. You know, Titan A.E. Yeah. was a big failure, and I feel if a movie like Titan A.E. was a big success, then we'd probably have more movies like Titan A.E. That studios would be willing to go that route to make to if it's profitable. And I understand that aspect of it. Maybe, you know, putting out a movie like Perfect Blue wouldn't be so worth studios' while to do so.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people would probably be like, "Oh, it's just like Black Swan," and you'd be like, "But yeah, no." But the thing that we are seeing more and more, especially as technology ramps up in filmmaking, is you are seeing live action film being influenced by the anime style a lot. I mean, some obvious examples would be the Wachowski Speed Racer, or Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and probably several of Guillermo del Toro movies as well. And I think that's something that's going to continue, because they're just so ahead of the curve there, and the level of intensity and the level of imagination that's at play is something that I think the really good directors in America are aspiring to.
Yeah, and there's always this this would-be trend in Hollywood when all of the comic book movies get exhausted. Where are we going to go? And the idea of let's just remake anime, like make that live action. I mean, we've been talking about the possible remake of Akira, which is on and off, which I don't think would do if they make. It's not easy just to translate Akira to America and just change all the names from Tokyo to Manhattan, because I feel Akira is a completely Japanese story that just moving the location to America wouldn't be enough. I would think of it as was it Roland Emmerich who did Godzilla, and just moving Godzilla from Japan to America, that was a big disaster. And if Hollywood makes Akira by just moving it from Tokyo to New York, that would be a disaster as well, because those things just don't translate unless you really take the story and really Americanize it and not just change the names.
I think that first of all, Akira is dead from what I understand. The American live action remake of Akira is dead in its current form. I think it'll probably come back because it's so enticing, because it just doesn't want to die. I think you want somebody in charge of that who has the clout to pull off something of that scale, and who also has the ability to say, hey, we really don't want to streamline this and make this more mainstream. We want to keep the kind of subversive essence of this, because it wasn't just about, you know, cool-looking bikes or futuristic looking cities and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot more to that film. It's about kind of militarization run amok. It's about commercialization. Just like there's a lot of subversive, irreverent things in it that are gonna get, you know, they're gonna get neutered if you try to make it a PG-13 action movie.
Yeah, and also when I watched Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar back in 2009, there are sequences where this general gets into this big mecha, and that's how they're like moving things around. I mean, that's straight from anime.
Totally.
And there's always these things. Well, James Cameron's next project, he's gonna do take the anime Battle Angel and make a live action of that. And I feel that one day that will be the well that Hollywood goes to is in Japan and just making anime live action and just making it Americanized.
There is a give and take though. Like let's talk straight here. Like there definitely is a give and take. Like in terms of Miyazaki, who we were talking about before, like just about every film he's made for Studio Ghibli has been a kind of variation on Alice in Wonderland. Like they all kind of revolve around a young girl who, you know, finds some secret, you know, universe and there's all, you know, there's lots of creatures and, you know, twisty things that happen. And it's kind of a coming of age story. And yeah. And so he takes a lot from things like that and Disney films. And also you have probably the most influential movie on all of anime, which is Blade Runner. Like can see Blade Runner in Ghost in the Shell, in Akira, in Metropolis. That film is incredibly part of anime's DNA.
Metropolis, I forgot about that. That's also a really, really good one as well.
And it almost made my list, except that I wanted to make sure it wasn't all science fiction movies that I was putting on the list. I wanted it to be a little varied up, which is why I picked something like Ninja Scroll, which takes place in feudal Japan. And it's really just like the Japanese equivalent of a sword and sorcery movie like Conan.
Yeah. And actually, one movie I can actually see being translated for American audiences would be Vampire Hunter D or something. Because vampires are so prevalent in our pop culture world right now, I think something like Vampire Hunter D, an American version of that, a live-action version of that, would actually be pretty cool.
It would be amazingly cool. I think, unfortunately, Stephen Sommers took a lot of Vampire Hunter D for the dreadful Van Helsing movie, which we all wish we could put down the garbage disposal.
Van Helsing, summer 2003 or 2004.
2004, yeah.
If I recall.
A date which will live in infamy.
But yeah, I guess let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night. Let's go with a final thought on The Secret World of Ariadne. Do you recommend people check this movie out?
Yeah, I recommend going, and it'd probably be a good date movie. Like, don't like be like put off by the fact that it's like it looks like it's for little kids. I mean, it's just a really well told story. The music is really good. It's I haven't seen the American dub, but I think John Lasseter usually oversees those, and they're usually above par. So yeah, like check it out. Like if you have kids, of course, bring your kids, and and check out all the movies in that from that studio's output. And and check out my article on the 9 essential anime movies at nextmovie.com.
I too would also recommend The Secret World of Ariadne. It's so magical. I love the world building of this. My favorite sequences in this are when this father and daughter go on kind of like the scavenger mission to get a lump of sugar. You know, like how he puts flypaper on his feet to scale a wall. It was pretty freaking awesome. Or how she takes a pair of earrings to scale down a curtain. Pretty
yeah.
Awesome. And also this movie is chock full, peppered in with stuff like that, down to what she uses to put her hair up, just this little clip that you would probably use to seal up a bag of potato chips or something like that. And she just puts that in her hair. I feel that stuff like that throughout this whole movie is what really lends to the imagination and how vast this world is, even though it just really takes place in this small location. It's simply a magical movie, and I wish we would get more 2D animation in American movies, but I guess this is a start, and hopefully that this movie does well enough that American studios like Disney don't have to think that everything has to look like Pixar, that everything has to be computer animated, to think, well, this is only going to – we can only make these kind of movies because it's going to make a lot of money. That investing in 2D animation, that there is still an audience that is more than willing to shell out big bucks for that.
For realsimo, dude. For realsimo.
All right. So where can we find you online, Max Avery?
You can find me online just about every day at nextmovie.com, which is it's an MTV site, but it's its own sort of entity, and you know there's lots of great stuff on there. It's very humor driven. We have other great writers on there, like Jordan Hoffman's been contributing to us lately. Jenny Miller contributes to us. It's a really fun site. And you can also find me once in a while on comingsoon.net and on blackfilm.com, where I am the token white guy.
it seems like Jordan Hoffman is popping up everywhere. It seems like every site I go to has a Jordan Hoffman piece.
Yes, he's the Zelig of the internet.
He is the Zelig of movie blogging. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. You can find all my work at Shakya.com as well as AutorCast.com and everything that is Rudy, like where you can find my Twitter, Facebook, everything like that. At even my phone number is on there, I believe, at RudyObias.com for everything that is Rudy. I would also recommend, yes, check out Max's article on nextmovie.com about the 9 essential anime movies. I agree and disagree with some of these, and I would have added some of my own, but we'll get to that at another time, I guess. So on the next episode of Movie Night, we're going to be discussing Act of Valor and perhaps Wanderlust. Wanderlust, the new film from David Wayne, I believe. So those are the movies coming out next week. So we'll be discussing that. So closing out this episode of Shakya.com Presents Movie Night, thank you so much for listening to our show. Goodbye.